Hey, wait, what do I need here?
Hello, everybody. Is this not working? Can you just hit admit so I can get this up on the TV?
Just admit to...
Yeah, admit everyone.
Admit. You have to do it one by one. Yeah. That's fine. Admit.
Yeah, I sent an email just now to everyone to log back on. So.
Okay. Let me just get this.
Hello, everybody. I am so sorry for the delay. I'm glad everyone is here now. Can someone say hi so I can make sure I can hear everybody?
Hi.
Awesome. Yay.
Hello.
Great. We are recording. I'm going to get us live on Facebook. Just bear with me for a moment. In person, we have some brave souls who brave the cold. The wind has died down, but it's a little chilly. But we got our hot chocolate, our hot pizza, and we are going to warm our souls with some Torah. There is a heater back there, but it's very small.
Where is it?
That yellow thing. Do jumping jacks? I like that. We can't turn it all the way up. It'll short circuit the building.
You know, I just came in and I just heard we can't do this. We're going to short circuit the whole building.
We have a heater and we can't turn it all the way up or it will short circuit the whole building. We have to get the right extension cord to be able to use it at full power. So we're just trying to keep warm up here on the roof. All right, we're going Facebook Live. Give me one second. All right, we got a good crew on. All right. We are now live on Facebook. Welcome, everyone. Rabbi Riles, we are ready when you are. Just making sure we're all set there. Just make sure to hit admit.
By the way, you want to do me a favor? Go into my office, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. And there's the heater in my office.
We can't have more than one plugged in. It'll... Right. It'll...
It won't...
Muted. Hold on. Now you're muted. There you go.
Can you hear me? Give me a thumbs up, guys. Hey. How are you? It's freezing here. Hey, Yoel, what's going on? Are you in L.A.? Where? Uh-oh, no, but Yoel is in L.A., nice and warm. It's freezing in New York.
Rabbi Wilds, we miss you, and Brian Chesky misses you, too.
Oh, okay, thanks, man. Nikita, welcome. Hello, Erica, and hello, Sharon. Hello, Jeremy. I'm doing my Peloton moment. Hello, Chase.
Can someone say hello back? I just want to hear the volume.
Somebody speak.
Hi.
Perfect. Thank you.
Wait, speak again. Speak again.
Hello.
And thus we've spoken.
Is that good? Okay, excellent. I can see them here. And you can see me. And then they can see you, meaning the in-person audience. I feel like one of those talk shows, like when there's four people in the audience. You guys ever watch those? The talk shows at night? And somebody makes a joke and, like, there's three people to laugh. That's us tonight. Okay. Chase, how are you, man? You doing okay?
Hang on.
Please. I'm doing okay. Always doing okay. You know me.
I know you are. Hold on a minute. All right, I got a glove.
All right, so funny, but tonight's topic is happiness. And we are going to talk about not... superficial happiness, not like the circumstantial highs and lows happiness. Is this recording, by the way?
Yes.
It is recording. Okay, excellent. Okay, so you guys, can you guys hear me okay? So first of all, I want to congratulate everyone that came in person. It's amazing what a Jew will do to get some free cold pizza. It's unbelievable. Cheers to you. And I just want to really thank you guys. We want to try to keep this as long as possible in person. It's supposed to actually get warmer during the course of the week. So we actually have classes here Wednesday night, and we have services here Friday night and Shabbat morning. It's going to be outside again. And we're getting a very nice group under the circumstances. So I want to begin with a story because I want to be able to share something that I shared in my book. And I actually wrote the entire book about this topic that we're discussing tonight, which is the long-term, what I would call really contentment, not the quick highs and lows that we go through in life when we get happy, when we get this, and we get sad, when we get that. But how can we try to somehow find a basic modicum of what we call contentment in life? So the story begins in the 1950s with a Dr. Stuart Wolf. He was the head of the University of Oklahoma's Department of Medicine, and he had just delivered a talk, a medical talk, in a small rural town in Pennsylvania called Rosetta. Just need to remember Rosetta, Pennsylvania. And he was having a beer with a couple of the local doctors after he gave this talk. And the doctor that he was having the beer with told Dr. Wolf that in his 17 years of practicing medicine in Rosetta, he rarely found anyone under the age of 65 with heart disease. Oh, I need to admit some people. Hold on. I feel so powerful. Wait, how do we do that? See waiting room? And then we admit you. Scott Shapiro, welcome. Admit. Okay. All right, welcome. Welcome, Lisa. Welcome, Scott. Hey, guys. Good to see you.
Hey, Rabbi.
Cold. We're out here in person, Scott. We're braving the elements.
That's amazing.
With my hello, Richard. Nice to see you again. Well, Richard, well, hello, Lisa. How are you? Hello, Jeremy, and hello, I said hello to y'all already. Okay, just tell me if anyone else needs to get admitted. So anyway, Dr. Wolf was in shock. He found out that in the small town in Pennsylvania where he had just delivered a medical talk, that no one in his 17 years of practicing medicine had he ever seen anyone under the age of 65 with heart disease. Now, that doesn't sound so crazy because it's 2020, but this is decades before the very aggressive cholesterol-lowering drugs that we now take for granted that thank God we have. But in the 1950s, heart disease was like an epidemic in the United States. And he didn't understand it, so he called in some of his colleagues. He was a professor of medicine at the University of Oklahoma. And Wolf called in some of his colleagues and his students from the university, and they began this very extensive test study of the people of Rosetta. It was a tiny town, but they went from house to house speaking to everyone over the age of 21. And the researchers took blood samples and they brought in sociologists and they conducted a very thorough investigation. By the way, I found out this whole story from one of my great and favorite authors, Malcolm Gladwell. Anybody read Malcolm Gladwell books? I love his stuff. Oh, you do? Oh, so this is from Outliers. And he tells this story, and I'm sharing this story with you. If I don't freeze first. Okay, so the medical help. Thank you. I can't say that, and also anesthesiologist. Oh, I just said it. So anyway, the scientists and the medical researchers, they went house to house, and they discovered the following thing. They discovered that most of the people who lived there lived until a ripe old age. Early sudden or premature death was virtually unheard of. And again, in the 1950s, when heart attacks were like an epidemic in the United States, there was almost no heart disease in Rosetta. There was also no suicide, no alcoholism, no drug addiction, and very little crime. It was like a very boring town to live in, but there was something special about this place. And they, of course, wanted to understand what it was. Also, by the way, nobody was on welfare. The question is, what accounted for this healthier lifestyle? They ruled out diet because the people of Rosetta in the 1950s shared the same unhealthy dieting. They did a study about the average calorie intake was terrible. They said that 41% of people in Rosetta's calorie intake was from fat. They regularly cooked with lard. Nobody was like jogging or doing exercise or doing yoga like you see today. Many of them smoked heavily and struggled with obesity. And yet the death rate was from heart disease was like less than half the national rate. So it actually made the question stronger. Also, I mentioned to you lower rates of suicide, no crime, no alcoholism. Anybody here know? Anyone on Zoom? Anyone here? What is arguably the most popular course ever taught in a university in the United States? The topic.
Happiness.
Thank you. Who said that? Okay. Happy. Anybody know who taught the class and in what university? I just tried getting them to come and speak at MG, but I can't afford them. Not Yale, close.
Harvard.
Harvard. Okay. Course on happiness, positive psychology, taught none other, of course, by a Jew. Tal Ben Shachar, an Israeli visiting professor. I went on his website today to see if we can get him to speak at MG. Charges between $50,000 to $100,000 online. So, okay, fine. He's not coming here. So, but we can quote from his books. And the largest... Wait, someone else trying to get in? No. Okay. The largest and fastest growing section, Barnes & Nobles. Anytime you go there, I tried getting my book in this section. Couldn't get it in. It's in Barnes & Nobles, but it's in the Religion Judaica section. I wanted to get it in the, not happiness, but close. What's happiness within?
Self-help.
Not mainstream. Self-help. Somebody said self-help? Self-help section. Once in a while, don't tell anybody this, I go to Barnes & Nobles, I take it out of the Judaica section, I stick into the self-helps. It's just easier. The point I'm trying to make is that... You're fine. We're good. The point I'm trying to make is that... I'm not going to make class too long, by the way. But the point I'm trying to make is that there's so much literature and interest in happiness. In 2008, when the happiness movement was flourishing in the United States, there were over 4,000 books written on happiness. Yet happiness seems to elude us. Study after study reveals that Americans consider themselves less happy than ever before. I'm glad I'm speaking about this the night before the election. By the way, vote tomorrow. Please, please vote. How many of you voted? How many voted here? I actually came into the city tonight to teach you guys and to vote tomorrow. I'm very excited to be able to do that. Not telling you who I'm voting for. We're not going there. Okay. Happiness seems to elude us. Psychology Today, very well-respected publication, and I quote, as a nation, we have grown sadder and more anxious during the same years that the happiness movement has flourished. And despite the fact that our generation is enjoying a standard of life that was unimaginable by our great grandparents, there are more stress-related illnesses in the United States today than ever before. The United States, the most affluent, prosperous country on the globe, we consume more than 75% of the world's antidepressants. The suicide and depression rates have gone up, and this is before COVID, and all the psychological studies show that we are just less happy. Thank you for bringing out more unhealthy food for our students. Maya just dumped Reese's like peanut butter cups.
And hand warmers.
Hand warmers.
Would you like
some? Oh, please. Yeah, can I have a, let me have a thing. I'll dangle this. No. The candy. Thank you so much. I just wanted to show you guys what you guys are missing. Look at this. This is happiness right here in this little package.
That's just not fair.
Happiness. Okay. How do you do the hand warmers?
Shana haba barazetta.
Shana haba barazetta. I'm going to get back, Chase. I'm going to get back to Rosetta in a minute. Can somebody just open this to me? I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't want to take my gloves off.
Thank you.
Oh, that's it? I can just have it?
Just shake it.
And then what do you do?
Just shake it and it'll warm up.
It's activated by the air. You don't have to do anything.
Will you put it in your pocket?
Yeah.
But then you have to put your hand in your pocket.
Put it inside your glove.
Oh. Thank you so much. Okay. Guys, let's give it up for Maya for all of her hard work for tonight. Seriously, this is not simple to set this whole thing up in the cold. Thank you very much. Okay, so the question is why? What produces happiness? It's not warm weather. And one thing we're going to rule out tonight, and that is money. Money, assuming you've got the basics, and I'll come back to that in a minute, there is little or no relationship between money and happiness. The research shows that provided – why is this doing this? Oh, some it's not me? Oh, sure.
Please make sure you keep yourself muted if you're not talking, because we can all hear you out here.
Hello, hello? Hello? Oh, you're right. Thank you. So the research shows that provided you have your basic needs met, what are your basic needs, physical needs? A roof above your head, clothing, you're not cold. Welcome. Thank you for coming tonight. Money and affluence are not determining factors of happiness. And therefore, as my professor of psychology from Yeshiva University, Dr. Pelkovitz, likes to say, the man sitting on a public bus on his way to his blue-collar job is no less happy than the man riding beside him on the road, sitting in the back seat of his chauffeured limousine on the way to his seven-figured salaried position. As long as you've got a roof over your head, you've got clothing, you've got food, you're not worried about where your next meal comes from, money doesn't make us more happy. Question is, what does? What do you think? Pizza. And hand warmers. So I'm not, these are really good examples of short-term happiness. Hand warmers.
Okay.
Reese's peanut butter cups. These things will make you happy. The problem is, how many Reese's peanut butter cups can you keep eating until you stop being happy? And eventually the warmer stops warming your hand. By then we'll be done with class, so don't worry.
It's more limited to the time on the
hand. I have to stop teaching before the hand warmers stop warming our hands. So if you look at the Torah, what's the Hebrew word for happiness, guys? Simcha. You know when it says the word simcha in the Torah? Mentions it a few times, but only in terms of the holidays. It says, V'samachta b'chagecha. It's a famous song that we sing, V'samachta. We sang it up here, actually, because it's sukkahs. V'chagecha, and you shall be happy in the holiday. It also says in the Torah, V'samachta lifnei Hashem. You shall be happy lifnei Hashem, before God. When was the Jew before God? Anybody know? Technically, when did the Jew come before God? We're all at Har Sinai, that's true. But every year, holidays, think about it.
Rosh Hashanah?
When was there a mitzvah for every Jew to go to Israel and be before Hashem in the temple, specifically in the Beit HaMikdash? The three festivals. Actually, we call them the Regalim. What's Regal? Regalim are the three. Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuot. Why do we call them the Regalim? Because a regal is a foot. And these were the... you had to use your feet. You had to walk. These are walking holidays because you had to pilgrimage to Jerusalem to bring the special offerings. Now follow with me for a moment. Rav Soloveitchik taught, one of the great rabbis of the 20th century. He said there's an intrinsic connection between being in the presence of God, being in the temple on the holiday, and being in a state of simcha, of joy. And the times of the temple, one was in the physical presence of God on Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot, when Jews would pilgrimage to Jerusalem, bring the special offerings. There they would come with their families. And there, it was in that state that they were actually obligated to be in a state of simcha, of happiness. Now, what would create this feeling? So I'm going to read you something. It's not a long class, so don't worry. This is from Maimonides. Everyone here have heard of Maimonides, the great Jewish philosopher, and he said the following in the Hilchos Yom Tov, in the laws of Yom Tov. He says, Ketzad, how do you fulfill the mitzvah of being happy on the holiday? So he says, depends who you are. Let's say you're a child. Ketzad, haktanim. If you're a child, noten lahem klayot. The parents are supposed to give the kids klayot egozim magdanot. We kind of did that with you guys tonight. Almonds and sweets, you know, like a little sugar rush for the kids. You want to make a kid happy, you give him some. That's how the candy man got developed, I think, in the synagogue. How many people grew up in a shul where there was a candy man? Right? Well, yeah, but the candy man was fun, and you waited online, you gave you a lollipop if you were a good kid, and fine. So the Rambam actually says that you're supposed to give your children klayot egozim and migdanot. These are different names for like sweets for kids. Vahanashim, what about women? How are women supposed to be made happy on the holiday? This is talking about the husband. Kone lahem begadim, he is obligated to buy for his wife clothing, v'tachshitim na'im, and fine jewelry. Kefi mamano, according to his means. You don't have to break the piggy bank, but there's actually a mitzvah for the father to buy the sweets for his kids, a little, I don't know, something, tchotchka for the kid, some candy, buy his wife some nice clothing or maybe some nice jewelry according to his abilities. V'hanashim, what about the men? Ochlim basar, they eat meat, v'shosin yayin, and they drink wine. Very hearty. The men drink wine, eat meat. She'ein simcha l'basar v'yayin, he quotes the Talmud, that there's only happiness unless it's accompanied with meat and with wine, and that's why we have to this day a tradition on the holidays of trying to have chicken or meat and some wine and so on and so forth. Now that's not it. Listen to what the Rambam continues to say. U'keshehu ochel v'shose, when the man is eating and drinking with his family, and the kids are happy because they got the sweets, and the wife's happy because she got the nice dress or the jewelry, and the man's happy because he's got some nice wine and some meat. Kishu ochel v'shosen, they're sitting around and they're enjoying the holiday. Chayev lahachil lageli atom balmana. I'm reading it in the Hebrew. He says, you are obligated to give food to the ger, the convert to Judaism, yatom, the orphan, and the almana, the widow. Imshar aniyam almalim, together with anyone else who is out of it. Aval mishenol daltot chatzero, but somebody who takes care of his own family and his own home, and he's eating and drinking, him and his wife and his children, but he is not causing the poor people and the embittered of souls. Ein zu simchas mitzvah, that is not the simcha of a mitzvah, that's not the joy associated with a mitzvah, ela simchas kreiso. It's merely the joy of his own belly. Listen to this, it's so interesting. What creates this feeling of simcha? Think about the common denominator of all these activities. Let's run through the activities. First of all, you're giving your immediate family something, making them all happy in one way or another, making yourself a little happy. You are taking care of other people, not just your family. You're feeding the poor, you're helping the stranger, the widow, the orphan, people who are really alone. And not only that, but the trip to Jerusalem for those three festivals was also not a simple thing. It could take a long time, sometimes long and arduous trip with one's family to Yerushalayim. And what would you do when you got to Jerusalem in the temple? You would bring a sacrifice, an offering. That costs a lot of money. So you'd have to take something of value and just literally burn it up on the altar. Parents are buying their kids sweets. Husband's buying his wife jewelry. The men are drinking meat, eating meat, drinking wine. They're sharing all this with the less fortunate. Think about this for a minute. What is creating simcha?
Giving.
What is it, guys? What's that?
Giving.
It's all about giving. It's all giving. It's getting yourself out of yourself by giving to other people, whether it's your family or people you don't even know but who need. And it's extending yourself to get to some place that's far away and then giving up something of value. Livestock in that day, it was like taking, livestock was like your worth financially. It's like taking a wad of cash and burning it up on the altar. How does that make you happy? Think about it. What creates simcha is not doing for ourselves. It's doing for others. And so often when we get down and we're unhappy, what's our initial tendency to do? Look inside. We're like, you know, I'm unhappy. I got to start doing more for myself. I have to start pampering myself. I'm going to get a massage. I'm going to take a yoga class. I'm going to go on vacation. By the way, nothing wrong with that, because sometimes we're burnt out, we're stressed out, and we need a little me time. But don't confuse me time and focusing on yourself with long-term happiness. That I would call dealing with stress. And you need to deal with stress. And sometimes a good yoga class and a good massage can go a long way. But that's not going to produce simcha. Simcha's long-term contentment and happiness can only come from helping other people, can only come from getting ourselves out of ourselves, not focusing on ourselves. And I know it sounds counterintuitive. You mean the more I do for someone else, I'm going to get happier? Yeah, it actually works that way. Somehow we've been pre-programmed, we've been hardwired to feel better about ourselves when we do less for ourselves. Now, again, please don't misunderstand me. Sometimes we need to do stuff. You know, I remember, I don't wear as many ties anymore, but when ties used to be more in, yeah, I'm talking about like a tie. I don't know, I like ties. I have like a million ties in my closet. I just love ties. And whenever I would get down about something, I'd find myself buying a tie. Like I go to Midtown. Maya wants to know where I am during the day when we used to actually all be in the office. So I do a lot of fundraising for MGE, and I go to someone's office, and then I figure maybe he's going to give MGE $10,000, and I walk out with a $1,800 pledge, and I get a little down. I find myself buying a tie. Hopefully it's on the street because they're a lot cheaper than walking into a building and buying one from a store. But whenever I would come home with like a new tie, my wife would be like, oh, you didn't get it, huh? She could tell right away I did something. And what happened? Now the tie gave me a little, it was like, you know, you put it in the closet, you put it on the next time, still feels good. After three or four times of wearing that tie, there's literally a diminishing point of returns when it comes to any kind of physical pleasure. It just ceases to really do anything for us. We become too accustomed to it, and then we need something more. It's like a drug. It's just not having its effect. What creates simcha is getting ourselves out of ourselves. Lasting happiness comes from living a life of purpose and meaning, which must necessarily mean getting ourselves out of ourselves and becoming part of something larger than ourselves. I'm going to read you a brief letter that somebody once wrote to the late and great Lubavitch Rebbe. Lubavitch Rebbe was the head of the Chabad Lubavitch movement for many years. He was a brilliant scholar. And he once received a very sad letter from a student. And it went like this, I'm quoting, "I would like the Rebbe's help." These are great, these warmers. We're just waiting for the plane to clear. Oh, I'm admitting someone? Well done. God. Okay, cool. I have to put my glove and warmer on again. Okay, so someone once wrote this letter, quote, "I would like the Rebbe's help. I wake up each day sad and apprehensive. I can't concentrate. I find it hard to pray. I keep the commandments, but I find no spiritual satisfaction. I go to synagogue, but I feel alone. I begin to wonder, what is life about? I need help." You know what the Rebbe did? It was brilliant. He took the letter. He sent it back to his student. And the reply did not involve a single word. The Rebbe merely circled the first word of every sentence and sent the letter back and said, "That's the problem." What was the first word of every sentence? It was "I." You know, there's only one book in the entire Hebrew scripture, in Tanakh, in the Hebrew Bible, that uses the first person singular "I." It's the only one book. It's called Sefer Kohelet. It was written by Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. He said, "I built for myself, I planted for myself, I acquired for myself." No other book in Tanakh uses the "I" so many times. But that was Kohelet's problem. He kept thinking about himself. He was rich and he was powerful, but he was never happy. And you know what happened when they started digging? into Rosetta, Pennsylvania, that tiny little town I was telling you about before, to discover why people's lifespans were significantly longer, why there was no suicide, there was no drug or alcohol problems like in so many other parts of the country. They discovered something very simple. Rosetta, Pennsylvania was settled by a group of immigrants from southern Italy in the late 1800s from a place in Italy called Rosetta. Okay. And they brought with them a tremendous sense of community. Everybody knew each other's name. And they were very faith-oriented. Almost everyone in town attended mass services every Sunday without fail. Huge amounts of volunteering. They counted 22 civic organizations in a town with a population less than 2,000, which means that everyone in town was doing something for somebody else. They went to church every Sunday. They helped each other. There was a sense of community. The senior citizens would sit on their rockers and on their porches. And if there was a kid from the high school cutting school, they'd drag him back by his ear to the principal's office. Everybody knew each other's names. They cared about each other. They saw how many homes had three generations living under one roof and how much respect grandparents were given. And then guess what happened? You know what happened? And I remember this because I'm old enough. The 1980s happened. The 1980s actually called it the me generation. It was a weird time, I remember. The new generation tried to become more Americanized in Rosetta. They started to reject the old Italian folkways. They even changed the architecture of their home. So instead of front porches, they put in another garage because they started becoming more affluent. They started getting more money. What happens when you put in a second garage in your home? You ever think of this? What's that? You buy stuff, but also architecturally separates you more from your neighbor. Because if you're sitting on a rocker on your front porch and your neighbor's sitting on a rocker on your front porch, there's nothing blocking you from your next door neighbor. Now you got another car, you got another garage. People started spending more time on their own stuff. Religion went down. Volunteering went down. People began to spend more time on their own issues. Today, Rosetta, Pennsylvania has one of the highest death rates of that part of Pennsylvania. And the truth be told, this happened all over the United States. Between the 1970s and the 1990s, there was a marked decline in the United States of attendance at public and civic meetings, membership in civic organizations. Does anybody belong to a civic organization? Our parents even. It was a very common thing in the 50s and the 60s. And the point that I'm trying to make is quite, by the way, there's a great book if anybody wants to read. Robert Putnam, he's a Harvard political scientist. He wrote a book called Bowling Alone. And he said in the 1990s, he said that even though more Americans were bowling more than ever, fewer were bowling in teams. We're just doing more on our own. And it's not healthy. This is one of the issues with COVID, of course. Big debate as to how much we should come out, how not much we should come out. But it's depressing being alone. Let's face it, it's hard. Aristotle taught this many, many centuries ago. Man is a social animal. You're not meant to be alone. And the point is very, very clear. We need to be part of a team. We need to get out of ourselves. And there are many other factors affecting happiness. Having lower expectations, being more grateful. But existentially, if we want to be happy, we have to live as part of a community. A community where people care about each other. A community where people know each other's names. Where people can volunteer for causes in which they believe. We have to attend services so we can stand before a force which is greater than ourselves. If life is only about me, my needs, and what I think, and I don't subordinate myself to something beyond myself, I'm never going to find happiness. And we have to give. If we don't give, we don't get. It's as simple as that. I remember probably 10 summers ago in Israel, the last day of the trip. We're hopefully going to go next summer to Israel. We missed it this summer. But every summer we go to Israel, MGE, we take two groups. And on the last day of the trip, I always try to introduce our group to a real hero, someone who really fought for the Jewish state. And one year we got to meet an elderly Iraqi Jew by the name of Yosef Nachmias. And he told us the most unbelievable story. He said that when he was 14 years old, he joined the British Army in Palestine. There were about 30,000 Jews who joined the British Army to fight the Nazis. They thought that the Germans were going to come to the Middle East. 3 years later, when he was 17, he joined the Irgun, which was the Jewish freedom fighters, began to fight against the British, who trained him. He told us that he had a choice if you were in the Irgun. You could either impersonate an Arab or a Brit. And since he was Iraqi, he would do better as an Arab. So he had his tooth removed. He's telling us this crazy story and had it replaced with a gold tooth so he could better resemble an Arab. A lot of Arabs had gold teeth in those days, I guess. And he was supposed to be, he was part of this famous operation to break free 8 Jewish fighters. It was supposed to be hung by the British. And I watched this man as he spoke to us. He had this total look of contentment and happiness, even though he must have had terrible stress as a child. He must have been traumatized by these experiences, but he lived his life for others. He gave his life to create the Jewish state. And I assure you, the level of stress was huge. Very little physical pleasure, but lots of happiness. And that's a very, very simple reason. If you think about it, Judaism is really designed in this way. What are the three pillars of Judaism? Anybody know? What are the three pillars? Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat HaMishpacha, the laws of family purity. Shabbat demands that we rest, but how do we rest? In a way that connects us to the rest of the community. Kashrut demands that we not simply eat what we like, but in accordance with the divine will, so it connects us to God. Tarat HaMishpacha, the laws of family purity, help us ensure that the sexual relationship between husband and wife is just as much about satisfying one's partner as it is oneself. And the central role that chesed, acts of kindness, we're reading in this week's parsha about Abraham. He was known to go out and extend himself for total strangers. It's an overarching imperative that requires us to give a certain amount of our earnings to those less fortunate, charity, to help our friends when they're in need. If you have a friend who's getting married, we don't just show up at the wedding because free booze and a lot of fun. We go to the wedding to be mesamech lechatan v'kala, to make happy the bride and the groom. God forbid somebody dies, we show up at the shiva. We open our homes, we provide hospitality to strangers. That's what gives us joy. That's what makes us happy. That's what Judaism is all about. Judaism is all about getting ourselves out of ourselves into other people's lives. Not to be a yenta about other people's lives, but to be concerned about other people. And it's happiness is one of those very, very tricky things. My teacher, Rabbi Lamb, who unfortunately passed away just a few months ago, he said the quote, I'm going to begin to end, and then maybe we'll open it up for discussion a little. Rabbi Lamb wrote, "The more concerned we are with our own happiness, the less likely we are to achieve it. The sages in the ethics of our fathers teach, quote, if I am for myself, who am I? The true simcha is attained only when I lose myself, only when my concern is with making others happy. That's why the mitzvah of simcha in the Torah is coupled with the mitzvah to provide joy for the poor, for the widow, and for the orphan. Because to be happy, we have to stop trying to make ourselves happy and start by taking care of others. That will ultimately bring true happiness." And I'll just conclude with one last idea. And this is a very, very basic Jewish teaching in Kabbalah, Jewish mystical tradition, that we are a composite of body and soul. Human beings are very complex. We're not just a bunch of sinews and veins and chromosomes, and we're not just a physical organism. We've also got a soul. And if we only pursue pleasure, and we're only feeding one part of us, the body. And then the soul goes hungry. And then we become unhappy and we wonder why. How could I be unhappy when I spend so much time feeding my body? We have to stop numbing ourselves, our unhappiness with pleasures that are fleeting. Money and things make the body feel good, and they can also reduce stress, and therefore they're important at times. But connecting to God, taking care of your family, getting yourself into the world of ideas, into the wisdom of our Torah, and devoting ourselves to other people's needs, other people who really need help, that feeds the soul. And that places us before Hashem. Remember, it says in the Torah, V'samachta lifnei Hashem, you'll be happy before God. That's what ultimately gives us simcha. And that's my blessing to all of us, that by devoting ourselves to other people and to other causes, and to ask yourself, what am I doing for other people? Because we often think that's like a selfless kind of thing to do, and I really don't want to extend myself. I just want to focus on me. It's the best thing that we can do for ourselves, is to give to others and to extend ourselves. And it's the only way to explain. I'll tell you, as a parent, being a parent makes absolutely no sense. Literally, you just extend yourself for these little, smaller people, and they get bigger, and you just keep giving. And sometimes it's quite aggravating, because sometimes you don't think it's always being well received. And yet, it produces the kind of joy and happiness that nothing else in life can. And that's really my bracha to all of us, that we should all find opportunities to give other people, and to get ourselves a little out of our own orbit and not get too caught up with ourselves. We need to, of course, take care of ourselves. You know, it says in the Torah, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. You have to love yourself. Please don't misunderstand my message tonight. If you don't love yourself, you can't love anyone else. But at some point, the focus comes from here and goes out there or up there. And that's a recipe, I think, for long-term contentment. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process, but it can bring something which is not subject to the highs and lows of life. I'm happy today. I'm sad tomorrow. Of course, that's always going to happen, the circumstantial highs and lows of life. We don't want to be dependent on circumstances for our happiness, our contentment. We want to have something more basic than that. And I believe that's the recipe that Judaism prescribes, getting ourselves out of ourselves and into Hashem beyond us. Thank you for listening. Any questions or comments, please? I did not mean for this to be a straightforward lecture. So, any questions or comments, please? Anyone on Zoom land? Rebuttals? Who are you voting for? Something. Come on.
I have a good suggestion.
Oh, actually, this is about to lose juice. One second. Okay.
I have a question for you when you're back.
Yeah. Okay, say your question.
Go ahead, Chase. Say your question.
I was going to say, you mentioned there's only one time in the Bible where a person speaks with, or there's a speech of the first person singular.
Yeah, that was Shlomo HaMelech, Sefer Kohelet, it's called.
Is that the line itself, or?
Oh, we're good. Ecclesiastes, one of the most difficult English translations. Ecclesiastes. What was your question, Chase?
No, I was going to say, is that just a first person ami, or is that a hitpael? Because you usually refer to hitpael in a positive sense rather than being self.
He just says the word ani, I. Okay. He just says I a lot.
Okay.
And it's interesting because Shlomo HaMelech was you guys have all heard of King Solomon, the wise King Solomon. So he wrote a number of books that made it into the Bible. One is the book of Proverbs. The other one is the book Song of Songs. The book I'm talking about now is called Kohelet. And it's he waxes philosophic, but he's bordering on depressed, if you actually read the tone of the book. And it's hard to understand how someone who could write the same author of the book Song of Songs, which is so up and romantic and beautiful, he's so passionate, but then he had another point of his life. And when he wrote Shir Hashim, he was extraordinarily successful as a king. He was a king of Israel, and he had a huge He was extraordinarily wealthy and powerful. He was known throughout the world, the ancient world. Solomon was the wise Solomon. It wasn't just Jews who knew him. But he was really, it seems as though, this is what Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, that's where I got that idea from, Chase, is that that it seems as though he was so focused on his own personal happiness, like, and trying to figure out himself so much. You know, a lot of us go through that. Like, we're just, we get so wrapped up in our own self, and we're trying to, you know, like, sometimes you just have to say, you know what, I might just actually find joy and happiness by helping other people, and then I'll figure out myself that way.
What about a I that is created through the verb in the past tense? Would that not also? Again?
What's that?
So a me is usually used when you're speaking in the present tense.
Correct.
But, you know, the verb can also imply an I in past tense, other tenses. Is it only in the present tense when somebody says a me that it's...
No. You could say a me, hayiti, I was...
Like, right, but hayiti, yud, that automatically means I, is what I'm saying.
No, ani is I, but I'm saying the next word would then denote whether you're talking in the past, present, or future.
This is a conversation for another time, I think.
We'll have to pick up on our grammar another time.
Yeah.
No, I understand what you're asking, though. Somebody else is trying to get in here. Amy. Okay, any other questions? Live? Any live questions? What's that? Okay, good. I'm going. Any other questions, Richard, before we jump to announcements? And we're going to... You okay? Are you happy, Richard? I can't hear you.
I guess, yeah. How about you?
All right. Thank you for participating. Any other comments, questions? Anybody else? No? Stephanie, Nati, anyone else? Okay. Announcement, please.
Okay. So on the note of helping others, hi, everyone online. I wanted to let you guys know about our annual blood drive, which is Sunday, November 15th. And it's in memory of Jill Wilds, who is Rabbi Wilds' wife, her father, Erwin Branfon. You can sign up on Facebook. I can also send you guys the link. So, you know, social distancing will be observed, temperatures will be taken, and you can donate blood and help other people. They are by appointment. And so you can sign up for a specific time slot and donate blood and give back. And hopefully, you never know, this could help your overall happiness. Like Rabbi Wild said, there will be some other programs in...
Just one pint. Like, I want to be really happy.
No, yeah. There's a limit. but you can give again in 3 months. There will be a few other programs associated with this blood drive, but at the moment, this is the details we have. I also wanted to let you guys know, make sure that you read my emails, because we are going to be announcing the dates of upcoming Friday night dinners that will be outdoors for the month of November. The details will be coming soon and signups will fill up quickly. So make sure you keep your eye on the email that I send once we have those details and the signup link. Thank you everyone so much for joining. Hopefully everyone in person, we can keep doing this for a little bit longer before we freeze our tuchuses off. And I think it should be warmer next week. Today was just sort of a little bit of a anomaly. Thank you everyone online who joined us. And thank you everybody. Thank you, Rabbi Wilds. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I'm good. We're good.
All right. Thank you everyone. Good night online. Do you want to say bye?
Bye guys. Thank you for coming, for joining, for participating. Thank you, Erica.
Okay. We answered that. Bye guys.